As you might imagine, a big ag is a multi-billion dollar industry. They got a lot on the line here, and they're using all their power and money to go after the organizations and individuals who have tried to put a stop to some of this outright cruelty underway in factory farms. When we come back, we'll have a conversation about with our guests about the kind of tactics that big ag has been using, whether there's danger involved here. We'll have some practical ideas on what you as consumers can do to improve the lot of animals all over the place. And we'll open up the phone lines. Stay with us. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. I should have got into this with Wayne Pacelli while he was here, but we ran out of time. So, Matt, I'll try to ask you this question. It's about how the agriculture industry is responding to efforts such as the Humane Society and other animal welfare groups to put an end to factory farming, or at least to change it. One of the items in the Rolling Stone article was about how the industry had sort of painted a bullseye on HSUS, the Humane Society, and on Wayne Pacelli, and has hired these henchmen to basically lie. Is that true?
Yeah, it's no wonder that the industry is going on an attack of HSUS. So we are the largest and most effective animal welfare organization out there, and we don't shy away from a fight, including those of multi-billion dollar industries like animal agriculture. As you said, they have a lot of money and they have a lot of power, but there's also a lot of suffering. In fact, there's more suffering that happens on industrial factory farms than all of the other sectors of where we interact with animals put together. And so we are on the front lines, investigators like Cody, but then also my colleagues that are working with companies to get them to move away from these cruel gestation crates and battery cages and fuel crates, and then also working on legislation in many states to ban some of the worst practices. So it is no wonder that the industry has painted a target on our back and is going after us. But what we do know is we are on the right side of history. We have millions of members throughout the country, and it's as simple as showing a photo. When we talk with reporters, when we talk to lawmakers, when we talk to normal folks throughout this country, and we talk about the abuses that are happening on these farms, the vast majority of people agree with us. And so it's sad to see the industry go to such lengths to hire Rick Berman, really a PR hitman, out of D.C. to attack the good name of Wayne. Wayne is a man that has dedicated himself to protecting animals for nearly his entire life. But it just goes to show how scared they are of us, and that they will go to such really disgusting tactics to try to smear our good name. But in the end, it really hasn't worked. If anything, each year we grow stronger, our donations grow larger, and our advocates that are under our brand, under the HSUS, are even more committed to fighting back against cruelty.
I guess Wayne had said that they've said that HSUS is really trying to ban hunting, that you're trying to end farming, that you're trying to make people wear hemp shoes, whatever. They throw it at the wall and make it stick, huh?
Yeah, it's getting pretty pathetic. They're just throwing anything they can against the wall to see what sticks, because they can't debate us on the merits. When I go into the legislative hearings and I talk with lawmakers, they can't defend these practices on the merits of the argument. When you talk about cramming an intelligent creature like a pig in a crate so small she can't even turn around, there's really no debating back and forth, because they know they're going to lose. The science doesn't support it. The public opinion doesn't support it. Really, common sense doesn't support the practices they're doing. So instead of defending their practices and saying, you know, why they use it or the science backing it, which there is none, they attack us. They attack the messenger. And it really just goes to show they really can't they can't fight us in the court of public opinion, because frankly, we're on the right side.
Cody, I'm curious whether the work is dangerous in another way. I know the actual physical labor had its certain risks, but have you ever had any threats? I mean, we're talking about an industry that, you know, has billions and billions of dollars at its disposal, and I would think that they would see a guy like you as a legitimate threat who might need to be taken out.
Well, I try not to think about that. It's certainly been, you know, a cause of concern in the last year or so since I've, you know, kind of gone public about my experiences, what sort of blowback that might sort of invite for me. I mean, it's true. I think every farm I worked at, I was accused in some manner or another of being undercover, usually more in a joking manner. But because, you know, I was really concerned about what was happening to these animals, I expressed some interest. I, I did, you know, I worked the extra mile to, you know, rescue a hen if her leg was caught in the cage and things like that. And for some people, you know, some supervisors, that raised some suspicion. And, you know, they make jokes about it. One person, though, actually went so far as to accuse me of my face. Said, you know, I think you're with PETA. Because why are you so interested in what's happening to these animals, you know? There wasn't really much I could do except sort of just try to laugh it off and be like, please, you know, let me just get on with my day and don't hassle me.
Where did you have the camera? But, where was the camera hidden? Or do you not want to say?
I'm afraid I can't share that.
Okay.
You bring up a great point. And one of the things Gandhi said that, you know, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, and then they fight you. This is the stages that you go through with any social movement, whatever it is. And in our social movement of animal welfare and animal protection, we're in that final stage. They are fighting us. They are spending billions of dollars. And in fact, there are many people in our organization, animal advocates across the country, that have had their lives threatened, that have had their property threatened because of the truth that we're willing to expose to the public. But I see it, in fact, not necessarily as a threat or anything that I should be concerned about. What I do is I view it as I'm putting myself out of business. I hope that in the next decade or so that I can use my law degree to go practice regular law because we've been able to shut down these factory farms. So for me, it's encouraging. I'm glad they're fighting us because it shows that they're really on their last leg.
Let's take a minute, each of you or so, or whatever time you need. Give me some practical advice for people in our audience, how they can make a difference. It seems like consumers have the power to make these changes. If you tell the producers of this stuff, I'm not buying it. I am not buying meat that's produced in a factory like this. I'm not buying eggs that are have defecation all over them and that it can force a change. So how can people know? Cody, maybe start with you.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You know, our purchases really do make a difference. We are the people ultimately financing whatever production practices we choose to support. So if people withdraw their monetary support for those practices, that's going to make a huge difference. We've been seeing that, you know, have a big influence in the marketplace as it is in terms of companies, you know, changing their protocols, putting in meaningful animal welfare standards, offering more vegetarian and vegan options. You know, but I think a corollary to that, you know, some people are always going to have to go or want to go for the cheapest option. You know, if you're feeding a large family on a thin budget, it's very tempting to buy the dollar dozen of eggs, regardless of how they're produced. So I do think that at some point we do need, meaningful minimum standards for animal welfare, because what's happened, the way this whole system got created in the first place, is it's been a race to the bottom in terms of each company trying to cut cost and, you know, at the animal's expense very often, and they just come to the worst possible animal welfare standards because there are no laws, there are no standards. Until very recently, there was no public scrutiny. So I think it's a two-step approach of, you know, encouraging changes in the marketplace, encouraging consumers to be better corporate citizens, I guess, but then also having that go along with a meaningful legislative scheme like the kind that Matthew and others are working for that will set a minimum standard and make sure that, you know, there are 9 billion animals that are, you know, going to slaughter. They're going to be doing so, at least most of them, for the foreseeable future. We need to have some standards in place, as a society about the way that they're treated.
Matt, a question to you, and then we'll open up the phone lines. Same kind of question. Advice you would give to consumers out there about a smart way to spend their money.
So at the HSUS, we promote eating with a conscience, and that we really subscribe to the three R's, which is reducing the consumption of meat and other animal-based foods, refining your diet that come from the worst production systems, like you mentioned about cage-free eggs. You know, switching from the battery cage eggs to cage-free or free-range, you can make a huge impact in the lives of those birds. And then also replacing meat and other animal-based foods in your diet with plant-based. So we really subscribe to the three R's. But more in line with the work that I do from a public policy standpoint is that people need to get engaged with the legislative process. People need to meet their legislators. They need to talk with them. They need to show that average Americans care about animals, but not just dogs and cats, that they care about all animals, and that includes farm animals. And so I encourage all of your listeners to meet with your legislators. Look up who they are, both your local and state and even your federal level. Connect with our state directors. We have state directors in nearly every single state, and see how you can get involved involved with the legislative process to ensure that the laws that they're passing at your state capitol actually reflect your morals and your values, to get engaged. Most people are scared of the legislative process, but it's actually fun, and it's a great way to protect animals, because one of the things that Wayne talks about a lot when he's speaking and also in his book is that we can't rescue our way out of these situations. Oftentimes, people, great animal advocates, will drive across the state to pick up one dog from a rescue and transport it to another rescue so it can get adopted, which is wonderful work, and I applaud them for doing that. But unfortunately, on their way to the other shelter, they stop at McDonald's and they buy a factory-farmed meat that came from deplorable situations that, frankly, if they knew about, they most likely wouldn't be consuming it. And so it's about aligning our morals and values, making sure that animal advocates and also regular citizens know about the legislative process, that they know about the farm animal issues. And so you can incorporate it into your own diet. You can get involved with the legislative process, which I encourage everyone. And also tell folks. Many of people, including myself, up to the age of about 26, I had no idea what a factory farm is. And I thank every single day one of my dear friends, Tara Zawardo, who works at the Animal Welfare Institute, for telling me about it when I started law school. And so for all of your listeners, tomorrow, today, talk to your friends and your family. Let them know about what you've learned. Have them look into it. And hopefully they can take action, because we can multiply our actions and our impact for animals by simply telling somebody else.
All right, let's see what's on the minds of our listeners. The phone lines are completely full. First-time caller, Troy in Sacramento. Welcome to the program, Troy. You're on with Cody and Matt.
Hey, Troy.
Thanks, George. Love the show. Very interesting topic tonight. All I can say is I do believe that there should be some reform out there. I don't think it's indicative. Every factory farm, whatever you might want to call it, there are some cases out there that they definitely need to get into with some state or federal intervention. My question for your guests, Matt and Cody, are you licensed in any of the states that you're working in, conducting these undercover insurance, or are you bonded? Do you have insurance? Do you belong to the state bar? That's what's going through my mind. Where are you coming back with your experience, and what type of liability do you have? If you do get pulled into court and you have to testify, and somebody loses his job, such as that one person in California, as bad as it might be, you do have to be licensed as a private investigator, and you have to have the proper insurance and stuff, and all that. On that great topic, I'd like to see a representative on here from Ag with you guys talking to get the other side, because I think it's a conversation we need to have. Thank you.
Thanks, Troy. I'm not sure that we can get somebody from Big Agriculture to come on with these guys at the same time. I suspect that would be a tall order, but do you need any kind of a license to do the kind of stuff that you did, Cody? Do you?
No, George, this is basically like a citizen investigation. So, working as a private investigator, which I've done in the past, you do need to be licensed and bonded. That sort of stuff gives you access to certain databases. It's a completely different profession. What we're doing is more akin to a tradition of citizen journalism that, goes all the way back to Upton Sinclair researching for the jungle by working undercover in a slaughterhouse. Investigators aren't, professional investigators. They're concerned citizens who are able and willing to do the work at these farms, to get access and get to see what's going on in these places. But we, like Matthew was saying earlier, we comport with all the required laws, whether it's, recording laws or whatever it may be. So there is no license required. These are just citizen investigations.
And Matthew, have you been able to sit down, have debates, have online discussions, on-the-air discussions with Big Agriculture folks? From what you said, that they don't want to be in the same room with you.
George, you're absolutely right, and Troy brings up a great question and a great something that we need to think about is it should be a conversation. We should be having a conversation about where our food is coming from, where the meat, dairy, and eggs are being produced. But unfortunately, nearly every time I've been on a radio show or a TV interview, Big Ag doesn't want to be in the same room as I am, because I have truth on my side. Unfortunately, they don't. But we do, at the Humane Society, we do work with family farmers. And I think that that's important to highlight, is that there's a huge difference between factory farms and family farmers. Family farmers like my grandmother and my aunt that raise animals on these farms, and they care for the animals and use more or higher welfare standards. But we also have to be cognizant of the fact that there are very few animals being produced on family farms in America. The vast majority, 95-98% of the 9 billion animals that we slaughter in the United States, they are coming from facilities that are exactly as Cody described them. We're talking about barns that run for hundreds of yards. They're made of metal and concrete. These animals never get to go outside. They never get to experience joy. They never get to have dirt under their hooves and sun on their back. That's the reality of animal agriculture today. And where we can work with them, we will. Just like Wayne talked about during his interview about us working with the United Egg Producers to work on federal legislation. But unfortunately, they're in the minority. Most of animal agriculture would rather fight than work with us on meaningful reforms. They simply want to have a standard. We can do whatever we want, whenever we want, however we want. How dare you document it? How dare you expose us? How dare you do anything other than say nice things about us? And they are going even so far as passing laws to make it illegal for you to show those abuses.
West of the Rockies, Scott in Duarte, California. Scott, we might have to take a break, but we'll try to get to your question here. Before that, what's on your mind?
I just think it's wonderful what you guys are doing, man. I died 3 times during a lengthy surgery, and one of the times I was with, my wife and I had a cat that we loved dearly, and actually it's in the Bible. They have spirits, and they're called Enochs, and they have souls too. And anyways, I got to see my cat during one of the times that I was dead, and it was beautiful and wonderful. And so just so the listeners know that these animals are loved by the Lord too. And treating them like that is just, it's deplorable. I mean, there's, in this day and age, if we can't figure out another way to get the vitamins and the proteins and everything, we already have that in other forms. So we don't need to do that. You know, I eat peanut butter when I want to work out and try to build my muscles up a little bit, you know? And that gives me all the protein I need.
Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you for that call. You know, guys, based on what you and Matt and Cody have been saying, I'm almost starting to doubt that those commercials about the happy cows, whether those happy cows really exist. When you see an ad like that, Cody, what do you think about?
Frankly, I think it's false advertising. You see things like that all the time. And I mean, you know, I live here in New York City, and you see ads for a service that sends, you know, that sends groceries to your door, and they advertise, you know, people picking eggs in a field. And I look back at my experience, and I go, perpetuating this myth of old McDonald's farm because they're you know, trading off of it.
Obviously, talking about,
there'd be no percentage in being and then having some transparency about how they produce it. So, yeah.
Cody Carlson, Matt Dominguez are my guests. We continue our conversation about animal welfare and factory farming, and go to as many of your calls as we can get to right after this on Coast to Coast. Ushering us toward our final segment tonight, talking about factory farms and the animal welfare activists who've investigated these operations, trying to show you where your food comes from, and hoping that you want to know. You want to know where those chicken wings, the steak, the burger, the bacon, where it comes from, how it's produced, because largely, as we've learned tonight, there's a disconnect between where our food comes from and when it gets to our plate. We're trying to do something about that. We're getting as many of your calls as we can when we come back right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Our final segment tonight, we're going to the phones east of the Rockies, Pat in Minneapolis. Pat, you're on with Cody Carlson and Matt Dominguez. Hi, Pat.
You superheroes deserve more admiration than any knight in shining armor for teaching how helpless animals are treated as horribly as humans in Hitler's concentration camp. My question is, for the organic and pasteurized eggs, I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't be assuming that those are all cage-free, and that I need to check on that if it doesn't say it on the package. And by the way, I do believe that your work is enhancing my health and well-being, not just the animals.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you, Pat, so much for that, for your kind words. You know, I really feel folks ask me why I do what I do, and it's I really feel like I have a moral obligation. It's the very least that I, and I know it's the very least that Cody can do for these animals, these poor creatures that are being tortured on these factory farms. I just know that if I was stuck in a crate where I couldn't turn around and engage in any natural behaviors or really act like an animal at all, I would want someone speaking for me. And I feel like that's my obligation. Kind of the rent that I pay to be in existence is to fight for these animals. But to your question regarding labeling, it's tough. There really are no legal standards when it comes to animal welfare labeling. And so what I tell people all the time is self-certify. That's the number one way that you can ensure, at least to the amount that to the most extreme amount that you can, is meet your family farmer, go to the farm. And if a farmer doesn't let you on the farm and see how they're treating their animals, chances are you shouldn't be buying their products. And so I highly recommend go meet your local farmer. Go and talk with them. Go to your farmer's market. Pay that extra money to go and ensure that the animal products that you're buying are in line with your morals and values. Because unfortunately, if you were to go to a factory farm and ask them to, hey, I want to come into your barns and see how your animals are treating, how your animals are treated, they wouldn't let you inside. And so self-certifying is the number one way. Don't trust the label. Don't trust what the marketing scheme is. As George mentioned, the happy cows come from California or these other marketing campaigns. You can't believe them. And so I encourage everyone to just go out and meet your local family farmer.
Cody, same question. Does an organic label on eggs, does that mean humane treatment of the chickens or not?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, you know, organic standards are great, but they speak mainly to the feed that's being fed to the animals to make sure they're being fed organic feed. It's about a adulteration of you know, having chemicals in the meat. Organic standards don't really speak as much to animal welfare standards. They really have no correlation. So you can have these big organic factory farms as sort of counterintuitive as it seems. And then other labels like cage-free, free range, these have, you know, regulatory definitions, but they don't mean what you think they mean. They're not, you know, guaranteeing that these animals are frolicking on pasture. It simply means that they're literally not in a cage, or in the case of free range, it means that they're in one of these big cage-free factory farms with perhaps a little porch, you know, with a screened fence so they can see sunlight, but not actually, you know, peck in open soil. So, and other standards are completely undefined, natural and things like that. They give you this sort of false sense that they're doing something differently, but they don't actually mean anything. So unfortunately, Matthew's really right. You know, these are sort of standards that we need to investigate ourselves right now.
International Line, Jeff in Canada. Good morning, Jeff. What's on your mind?
Hey, good morning, everybody. Yeah, I just wanted to tell you that being an over-the-road trucker myself, I absolutely 100% know for a fact that, you know, having hauled eggs to California, supposedly so they could repackage them to say that they're free range.
Oh, boy.
It's been going on for at least a couple years that I know of, and just really, you know, whether the people want to believe it or not, that's what's going on. That's what's happening. That's what the way these big farms operate. That's, they'll do anything to try to, you know, lower their costs. And that's what they do, is they ship them from Iowa back down California. And, you know, that's.
And slap a label on them, huh? Wow. Cody or Matt, are either of you surprised by what Jeff is sharing with us here?
Hey, For as long as I've been working in this movement in combating factory farms, there's really no story I think you can tell me that would surprise me anymore. No matter how far you go down the rabbit hole, it continues to get deeper and darker. And so it's not a surprise at all that they would do this. What it comes down to is this is money. They care about one thing, and it's about making a profit. And when it comes to animal welfare, when it comes to environmental concerns, when it comes to food safety, when it comes to their very own workers, they will pinch every penny that they can, whether or not that should be done. And it's very sad to see that done. But the great thing is you have a caller from Canada, and Canada just recently came out with some regulations to ban gestation crates, the intensive confinement of mother pigs. And we're seeing a lot of movement on this issue. Farm animals matter. And going back to the labeling for the animal products, there's a reason why these factory farmers are using the labeling that they are, is because they want to capitalize on this concern that people have for their health, for the environment, and for animal welfare. But unfortunately, a lot of these labelings are misleading or just plainly false.
Maybe Jeff could drop an email to one of these guys or the organizations they work for and give us a hint. This sounds like it deserves an undercover investigation. That would be a good expose, wouldn't it?
Couldn't agree more.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the call. And I strongly urge you to get in touch with these guys through the links that we have on the website. Thanks for calling. Wildcard Line, Susan in North Dakota. Good morning, Susan. You're on with Matt and Cody.
Hi. I appreciate you taking my call. I probably live in one of the last regulated states. There's no laws. About a year ago, a guy had over 100 horses on his farm, and the majority starved, but they tried to save some. You know, and if you, there's just no laws here, and we try to vote it, and we try to give it in. But you can't get past the old boys club. And they showed on TV, you know, you send money. There's just no respect for animals in this state.
Well, that's sad. Have either of you worked in North Dakota? Do you have any experience with animals up there?
We have the Humane Society worked up in North Dakota to try to, unfortunately, eventually did pass felony level animal cruelty provisions. But she's in one of the lower tier states when it comes to animal protection. And simply, she's right. In a lot of these states, while there are anti-cruelty statutes and there are some laws that do protect against cruelty, they don't go far enough. A lot of the practices that are done on industrial farms or even to companion animals in some of these states are so egregious. They're so horrible. They cause so much suffering. And if they're not against the law, a lot of times the violators typically just get a slap on the wrist. And when you think about some of the cruelties that are happening, in particular to livestock, to farm animals, it raises to a level of people should be prosecuted. They should be put out of business. They should be put in jail for the torture that they inflict on these animals. But unfortunately, there simply are no laws, and that's why we need folks like your callers to get engaged in the legislative process. We need to pass stronger laws in all 50 states on the federal level that protects these creatures, these defenseless creatures that can't speak for themselves. We are their only voice. And so we need to get into the legislative halls. We need to meet with our legislators. We need to pass stronger policy that protects against animal cruelty.
On the Wildcard Line, Karen in Doyle, California. Good morning, Karen.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, George and Matt and Cody. It's great what you're doing. Thank you. And I wanted to know, I have a couple questions. And
okay.
Can I look online to see if a certain store is getting factory farm animals?
That's a great question, and it's a tough one. The supply chain.
I have one more question after you're done.
The supply chains are typically hidden, and the industry wants to keep you in the dark. A lot of times when you go to large supermarkets or your local restaurant, it's very difficult to find out how they're sourcing their animal products. But I encourage you to ask that question. Go into your local supermarket. Go into your local restaurant. Go in and ask them, hey, you know, I really care about animal welfare. Where are you getting your eggs? Where are you getting your dairy? Where are you getting your meat? And if they can't tell you, then chances are you probably don't want to be eating there. And so I start asking those questions, because when people start asking those questions, you're going to start seeing corporate retailers, you're going to start seeing restaurants changing their procurement policies like we see on the gestation crate issue to ensure that there is more transparency in the supply chain. So that's one thing that you can do that would have a huge impact on the welfare of animals, getting just asking that question, hey, where do you get your food from?
Yeah. Oh, I got one more question for the both of you. Can the Bundys charge the BLM for animal cruelty and abuse?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
The Bundys that happened in southern Nevada with the BLM issue, can they actually charge BLM with animal abuse and cruelty to animals?
That's a little bit out of my purview. I work solely on the farm animal protection side. So although I do know that for a lot of folks, the treatment of wild horses is a major concern, but it is it's one that I actually don't have an answer to that.
Cody, yeah, I think Karen was – yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I wouldn't know about that either.
All right, Karen, thank you for calling. We have Gary in Tampa, Florida. Good morning, Gary. What's on your mind?
Good morning, folks. I want to tell you, first of all, George, you guys at Coast are amazing. The format that you have allows for a depth of information presentation that I just don't see that I can get anywhere else. It's like almost like each of your shows is a college course being presented by college professors, and it's just amazing. And I like to say to Matt and Cody, I think what you're doing is great, but the ignorance and apathy of the American public is profound. And, you know, I wish you the best. I got one question. I'll take the answer off the air. These ag gag laws that prevent people from doing some of the activities that you talked about, like from public property and stuff, I mean, that is blatantly unconstitutional. Now, the powers that be will always try to pass laws and do ridiculous things, and they get away with it until they're challenged. So, relative to some of these ag gag laws, which are just crazy, I mean, if they do charge somebody, when you get to court, I mean, are you able to show that these are, just the First Amendment, freedom of speech and freedom to petition the government for redress of grievances? I mean, do these laws hold up in court when they're challenged? And I'll listen to your response off the air, and you guys keep doing what you're doing. And thank you, George.
I would imagine both of you would like to have a chance to argue that in court, wouldn't you? The First Amendment issues, if nothing else.
Yeah, I thank you so much for the call. And fortunately, he comes from Florida, was one of the original ag gag states, pushed by an egg factory farmer there. And fortunately, it failed in Florida. But he brings up a really grave concern. Wonderful groups like the ACLU and First Amendment groups have been screaming from the mountaintop that these laws violate our state and federal constitutional protections, whether it's First Amendment or others. And at the Humane Society, we're really focusing on not challenging in the courts the laws that already exist, but preventing states from passing them in the future. That's where most of our focus is going. But there are some groups out there that have filed legal challenges to the Utah and to the Idaho ag gag laws that passed over the course of the last couple of years. And I think what you're going to see is the courts are going to be dismayed with these ag gag laws, just like we are on the animal welfare and the food safety concerns. I think you're absolutely right that these industries do not care that they violate the First Amendment or they violate our constitutional protections. All they want is people to not go into their farms. And I'm very hopeful that these legal challenges will be successful. These ag gag laws will be thrown off the books because they are just blatantly unconstitutional and offensive.
Gary, thanks for that call. Cody, you got your law degree recently, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I'm working as an attorney right now.
I would think that this would be a fun case to argue, that they actually make the mistake of pressing an ag gag type violation case. That would be a fun one to argue in court.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting issue. A good friend of mine, Lewis Ballard, actually wrote a wonderful essay on it because, it raises really huge issues. And I think that's particularly true. I think what the caller said was really right about, freedom of speech and petitioning for a redress of grievances. In the wake of all the progress that's being made, largely based on these investigations, consumers and corporations changing their purchasing habits and laws being passed, it's very obvious that these sorts of investigations are playing an important function in our democracy. And it sets a really strange precedent if companies can kind of just, you know, get their way out of public scrutiny by passing these really strange laws. I think the idea behind a good democratic government is to have open debate, full information, and to the effect that these laws are trying to stop them, which they're, you know, pretty blatantly trying to do, it does raise some really big issues, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with
if this were to withstand a legal challenge, the insurance industry, the hospital industry, you can't write stories or report about us either. They all try to get away with it. I think we don't have enough time. I appreciate all the callers who've called in, and I just want to give both of you a chance to do a wrap-up sort of what the people in our audience should keep in mind. Cody, starting with you.
Well, first off, thank you so much for having me on the program. I think what the caller should keep in mind is just, you know, be aware of this issue. Take this to heart. I think it's a pretty radical notion for us to start thinking of farm animals, which for so many decades now have been, kind of out of sight for so many of us, to start thinking about their experience. I know for me it was a huge realization when I started looking at the food on my plate, all kinds of it, and thinking about where it was coming from and what that represented for me, what I was being a part of. And that seems to be a conversation we're really starting to have in a lot of really meaningful ways. So I invite everybody to be a part of it and to help out, you know, in whatever way they're able.
Thanks for the work you did, man. That was some courageous stuff. Matt, your final thoughts?
Yeah, George, and thank you so much for having us on and having this dialogue, because it is important. I think that for us as a democracy, as a society, to support these ag bills, to allow this to continue to happen, really for us to ignore the suffering of so many creatures, 9 billion in the United States, really tears at the moral fabric of humanity, what it means to be human, and we need to care for these animals. And that just doesn't include our dogs and our cats, but the farm animals, the animals that are being slaughtered each year. And more in particular, these ag bills are just so offensive, and they threaten us on so many levels, constitutional concerns, food safety, and animal welfare. And so I encourage all of your callers to do more research. Go to thehumanesociety.org. Do some Google terms for factory farming. Look into where your food is coming from. Take action, because each and every one of your callers can make a difference for the lives of farm animals by simply, when they sit down to eat, choosing compassion over cruelty.
Thank you both. Appreciate it. And I want to thank Nathan Staton, Gina Salvati, Dan Galati, Chris Boros, and our webmaster, Tim Benall. Also, my earlier guest, Dane Wigington, Wayne Pacelli, and, of course, Cody Carlson and Matt Dominguez. Hope you folks have enjoyed the program. I'll be back next month. Good night, everyone.